Well, good morning to everyone. I'm so grateful for a beautiful spring day in Missouri. So good to have you here. When I was in college, I was on staff at a little small church doing the worship of music and the youth. And the pastor asked me if I would preach one day because I was kind of planning on preaching, but that was only God's plan. I wouldn't stay in music. But anyway, I got all prepared, and I worked, and on the way, I thought, boy, this is so great, people are never going to want to hear Billy Graham again after they hear me today. It's just going to be absolutely awesome, and I was so excited about that, and I wasn't up there long till I knew I was in big trouble, and everybody else there knew I was in big trouble, and it was one of those churches where the pastor, they stand at the back door and greet everyone on the way back out. And he turned to me at the back door before anyone started coming out. And he over and said, son, don't feel badly about this. Everybody strikes out once in a while. That was not the encouragement that I needed. You'll notice I never stand at the back door on the way out. But sometime later, I spoke at the university campus at their commencement address. And when I sat down after the address, I sat down by the president. And he leaned over and he said, that is the greatest message I have ever heard for college students. I think he probably said that to everybody, but I just took it in like I was the only one and enjoyed it because it was encouraging. All of us need encouragement, do we not? All of us, sometime or another, are in serious need of encouragement. That's what this book of 1 Peter is all about. We're going to be walking through a journey in the days ahead on 1 Peter and the hope and the encouragement. He says it's written to a people that are scattered, dispersed. And you know why they're scattered? Persecution had hit. It was during the days of the emperor of Rome, which was Nero. He was absolutely a maniac, according to history. Did bizarre things. He would set Christians on fire just for his own entertainment. Crazy. And so Christians were running for their life. And so Peter is writing to them to encourage them and give them hope in the midst of all these trials that are going on. We need hope. We cannot live without it. Duke University, and I thought about this when they were defeated by KU. But anyway, of the demonstration they did of, and I don't know why rats always get such a dirty deal, but they were going to see how long a rat would swim before it would drown. So they put one rat over in this vat with absolutely no hope whatsoever getting out. And it swam for a little while, not very long, and just took a dive and died. The other rat in another vat, it looked like it had great possibilities that that rat could get out. And he worked and he worked and worked and swam for hours. The hope kept him going. I personally think that is a rotten deal for both rats. Because the rat that had no hope, that's a rotten deal. If life does not have any kind of element of hope, it's kind of a rotten deal. Then on the other hand, this rat that was facing a false hope, that's a rotten deal too because he died just like the other one. And there's a lot of people that live on false hope. Here's what I know about false hope. It can keep you going for a while. It can look very good and energize you for a while. Did you ever buy any penny stock? I had a friend one time that said, hey, here's a penny stock, and I just know I've got some background. I just know it's going to do really, really well. It won't cost all that much. And so I sunk a lot of money at that time in that penny stock. And sure enough, man, it went, ooh, it was great. And then he came back later and he said, time to sell. And I said, what do you mean? I had great hopes. This thing is going like a skyrocket. I'm not selling. Guess what happened to that penny stock? You're right. I lost every penny. False hope kept me going for a while, and then greed took over, and I lost everything. I wonder what you're living on. Are you living on a hope that is sure? Do you have your journal? We gave you these journals out last week, and we encourage you through this series to take notes. And I'm going to give you four reliable things that you can put your hope in. And we'll give these out again next Sunday. That's called enticement. So if you'll come back next Sunday and don't have one now, we'll give you one next Sunday. But I want to give you four things that I think are reliable. And then I don't expect you to take my word for it. You ought to check all this out. But I'm going to give you four things that Peter tells us here that is reliable. As you're taking notes, remember you want to think, what does this say about God? What does this say about me? What does it say about what I need to do? So the first one is this. Number one is the reliability of a living hope. Now, why would I say that is reliable? You ought to ask a question. How do you know it's reliable? How can we stake our life on it? Is it reliable, really? Here's what he says in 1 Peter. He said, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope. What is this living hope? Is that false hope or real hope? And to a living, what's it based on? Hope is really no hope at all unless it's based on some. Your hope is never any greater than what you put your hope in. So it's a living hope through, here's what it's based in, the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. That is a living hope. How do you know? How do you know that's valid? Most of you here today would probably say, I believe that Jesus has risen. I believe he conquered the grave. And the question I want to ask back to you is, how do you know? Is that a false hope? Are we all fools? Or is that for real? How do you know? Timothy mentioned a moment ago, we have this group that we do on Sunday, and it'll be only five sessions. It'll start next Sunday night at 4:30. It's down in the training room. And we'll talk about, how do you know? How do you know? If you're just doing that on a whim, or because your parents told you that, or how do you know Jesus Christ came out of the grave? Somebody said, well, that's just what I've always believed. Is that good enough for you? Or some of you say, I believe it's true because the Bible said it's true. Okay, I got another question. How do you know the Bible's reliable? These are the things that we don't want you to check your brain at the door. You ought to ask questions. You ought to question every message. You ought to think through, okay, is that accurate or not? And do the homework. It's a living hope and it's valid. Let me ask you this. You know, Warren Buffett has been known to give away a lot of money if anybody come up with a perfect NCAA or NCAA bracket. He's never given any money away yet. But this year I read where he said, I'll give to his employees, I'll give $1 million a year for the rest of their life if you get a perfect bracket. You think he'd really do that? You think he's capable of doing that? I think he'd be capable of doing that. Okay, let me give you another scenario. I offer you $1 million for the rest of your life if you get a perfect bracket. How many of you are going to trust in me or Warren Buffett? Okay, Warren Buffett. It didn't take you long at all to respond to that. How do you know? Because you know he has a lot of money. So what I'm trying to say is that the hope that we have in Jesus Christ is based on a promise. The only person in all of history that ever made this promise, I will come out of the grave. In fact, look at it in John chapter 11. Here's what he says. I'm the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? He said. Do you believe this? Is that true? How do you know? I had a funeral this last week. I got one again this week. I will stand and I'll read that scripture. Am I giving people false hope? I've done between 500 and 600 funerals. Some I don't understand at all why it happened. But I can stand with all confidence for everyone that's a believer that Jesus said, I'm the resurrection and the life. And he said that before he went to the cross. Is that true? How do you know? Many of you would say, I believe that is true. I'll say it again. How do you know? These people were facing real difficult times. And a lot of times in those difficult times is when people will, for example, a man by the name of Frank Morrison, he was an investigative reporter. And he said, I am going to write a book that will throw out this nonsense about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So he did. He wrote a book. You know the title of the book? You can go to Amazon and buy it. You know the title of the book? Who Moved the Stone? He became a believer. Lee Strobel read that book when he was on his search. Lee Strobel was, by the way, for some of you, this will make you happy. He was a graduate of MU in journalism. Went on to Yale in a law degree. Got a job as an investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And his wife, Leslie, came to the church where for a couple of years I was on staff. And she said, Lee, why don't you come? He said, I'm not going to buy into all this nonsense. And she shot back at him pretty quickly and said, okay, Lee, you're an investigative reporter. If you don't think that this is true, then why don't you just disprove it? That's all it took. He went to work. He worked diligently because he was confident that he could disprove. And he wrote a book. It's called A Case for Christ. He became a believer. Now, are we all just being conned? Is this all foolishness? Or is it true? How do you know? Well, these people were under persecution, so Peter writing to them, if you go on over to chapter 3, verse 15, I want you to see what he says. And if someone asks you about your Christian hope, in other words, these people were dying for their Christian hope. They were being persecuted. They were becoming martyrs. They were seeing people burned at the stake by Nero. They'd see all of that. And that these people of the Christian belief and the followers of Christ, they saw something so different in them about that hope. And so Peter said, okay, there's people going to be asking you about that. So if someone asks you about this Christian hope of yours, always be ready to explain it. Can you do that? People say, why do you believe that stuff? Can you give them a good, intelligent answer? I'm talking to you that are believers this morning. You say you believe. I want to know why. I want you to be able to also answer, how do you substantiate that? If you can't, it's no hope at all. So the first point you're writing down in your notes is the reliability of a living hope. The second one is this, is the reliability of a future life. He says here that this future life to an inheritance that is imperishable. Do you earn inheritance or is it given to you? I'm an only child and I inherited everything my parents owned. I didn't earn it. I didn't deserve it. It is an inheritance. Is that true? Is there something beyond this life? Oxford University professor, by the name of Stephen Dawkins, says it's all hogwash. There's nothing after this life. When you die, it's like blowing out a candle. That's it. Is he right? Am I a fool for doing this? Are you a fool for coming and worshiping something that never did happen? Or is it true? I know that 1998, March the 4th, will always stand out in my mind. 2 weeks before that, my dad had passed away. 2 weeks later, on March the 4th, my mother passed away. I remember in the hospital, they said that we need to have her in hospice care. And they brought me the papers to sign. Now, I believed in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I would say, yes, I believe that life is beyond this grave. But I'm telling you, when I picked up that pen to sign that paper, there was something inside of me that said, okay, Vernon, this is a real deal. Am I just signing her death warrant? Or is there something beyond that? We took her home, put her in a wheelchair to go to my dad's funeral. And a few days later, she was unconscious. And I remember going in and sitting on her bed, knowing that the time was very near. And I watched her forehead turn gray. And I watched the color go out of her face. And then no more breathing. I was the only one there, and it was very quiet in the house. I went over in the living room and sat down in my dad's old chair. His Bible was there beside the little table with a devotion book in it. And I opened it up and began to read John chapter 14. And it says the words of Jesus, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. And I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, listen to this, I will come again. That where I am," and I stopped there for a moment. And I thought, oh, Mom's not here. "That where I am, there you may be also." And I had the strangest thing that happened. I began to feel a rejoicing. I thought, this is crazy. My mom in the other room has just died. Why would I rejoice? And all of a sudden, I realized she's not here. According to Jesus, she's with the Lord and my dad. And I thought, this is great. Neither one would want to live alone. I couldn't have planned it out better myself. It's a time to rejoice. Tell me, am I a fool? Is this just a bunch of craziness? How do we know? The second thing is the reliability of a future hope. If Jesus did not come out of the grave, you and I and all of us believers are fools. Or maybe it's true. How do you know? I want you to know that you can put your faith and trust in. How do you know? How do you know that this is real, that you can trust it? He says, not only do you have an inheritance, but it's imperishable. It fades. My dad, he had a lot of tools. I loved his tools. I had a good many of them in the back of my Explorer. Somebody stole my Explorer and all the tools. That didn't last long, did it? I don't know how many hats he had. I looked at him the other day. They're crusty. You wouldn't even want to try to wear one anymore. They're fading fast. And then he had one, just, you remember, some of you might remember what a transistor radio is, kind of the state of the art, that it doesn't even work anymore. I mean, it's fading fast and I'm still here. Jesus says, this hope has a reliability that beyond this life, there's more. Is that true? How do you know? How do you know? That's when I want to keep pressing on you to check it out. Check it out. Come to Exploring Faith. Number three. There's another reliability. The reliability of trials are not being in vain. This is a strange sounding thing, but look at it. Peter says, in this you rejoice. In what? In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been grieved by various trials and tests. That doesn't make sense, does it? That you would rejoice in trials and grief. That you, life is full of trials, tribulations, and times that this world does not make sense. There's times that life doesn't make sense. There's times that we cannot explain what's going on. We live in a senseless world because it is a fallen world. And Humpty Dumpty cannot be put back together again, but all the king's horses and all the king's men, there's only one that's promised that ultimately he'll put it together. Is that just crazy thinking? I think that God is a lot more concerned about your character than he is your comfort. Any of you play golf? You notice a golf ball, it has dimples on it. Why would they do that? Why not have a good, hard, smooth ball that will sail in the air and sail a lot farther than dimples? Is that just to challenge you? Or quite the contrary. Those dimples will cause a ball to go farther for most of you. They never did go very far for me, dimple or no dimple, you know. I gave that up a long time ago because I'd lie, cheat, and steal and everything else. I couldn't be Christian and play golf, so I... There's something about test and tribulation, and I've asked numbers of people this. When did you grow the most personally and spiritually? I've never had anyone to say, well, I'll tell you, the time that I developed and grew the most is when everything was going my way. I mean, it was so wonderful. No, they'll always say, and then they'll usually tell me about a time that was very difficult for them. Here again, God is more concerned about your character than he is your comfort. You know, I went to seminary just next door here, and I paid good money for them to test me. And I had one professor, Dr. Morton. Some of you remember that. In fact, he was a member of this church when he was alive. Taught archaeology. I probably went to class more prepared in his class than about any class that I took. You know why? But because he was known to give pop quizzes. Not all the time. That was what was so aggravating about it. Because you would prepare and get there and no pop quiz. And then as sure as you begin to kind of let down, you go into class and he said, now class, get out a sheet of paper. And I'd tremble, you know. I paid money for that. But that testing caused me to grow, and I loved archaeology. I loved the class. I did not love the pop quizzes, but I learned from that, and it made me grow. I cannot explain why you're going through a very difficult time right now. I just know that life's not fair. I just know that it is full of things that we cannot understand or explain. But I know this. There's a God that loves you. And he's just. And he will ultimately make all things right. And there's something about knowing his love that I can trust him. I've told you before, when I was just a kid, I had my tonsils out. And I remember going to the hospital. My parents were taking me early in the morning. I was scared to death. And I looked at my mom and dad in the front seat. And I thought, my mom and dad love me. And they would not put me through anything that was not best. And you know what I did? I went to sleep in the back seat on the way to the hospital. There's something about a trust in the love of God, knowing of how much he loves you and accepting that. One more thing. And this fourth thing as reliable is the reliability of salvation. Look at what he says here. Though you have not seen him. This sounds kind of crazy, I'll warn you. Though you have not seen him, you love him. How do you do that? Though you do not see him now, you believe in him. How do you do that? Do you believe in something you cannot see? What is he trying to say there? Well, there's a lot of unseen things in the world that you believe. By the way, God has given us a gift of faith to trust. You can trust. You trust many things every day, and many of those you cannot see. There's some things in this room that you cannot see. Air would be one of them. But you don't hesitate to believe that when you suck it in, it'll keep giving you life. Well, what about electricity? We can't necessarily see electricity. You may see the sparks and evidence. But I have some bare wires over here. And you don't know if there's electricity there or not. You cannot see. Why don't you take a hold of them for me and let's find out. I have a man in our church that does electrical work in my house once in a while, and he'll turn off the breaker, and then he has an instrument that'll even check the wires after he's turned off the breaker to make sure they're not hot. You can't see. But even though I cannot see, I don't hesitate flipping on the switch for the lights. I don't hesitate to plug in the refrigerator. I don't hesitate to plug in the toaster. I don't hesitate a bit, even though I cannot see. You cannot see God. We no longer at this time see Jesus. But he said, though you do not see him, his love is real. I was reading psychological journals this week about people that have difficulty receiving love. And there are people that really struggle with receiving love. And suddenly their mindset is, how could anyone love me? I've been such a failure. How could anyone love me of all the evil that I've done? How could anyone love me because of the way I look? I can remember when I realized Charlene, my wife, really loved me. Wow. I realized that. But it's not real until you accept it. Electricity is not real to you until you accept it. Love of God is not real until you accept it. It's more than just praying a little prayer when you were a kid or been baptized. It's an acceptance of that love. And sometimes it's hard, and I've heard people say, I don't think God could love me and do anything because I've been such a bad person. It's exactly you that he loves and wants so dearly to come in to your life. He says, even though you do not see me, you love me and you believe in me. What's that believe business mean? You know, I believe in doctors and antibiotics and airplanes and God, but none of them changes my life unless I accept and surrender. You know, I was on a radio program one time. The question came, what does faith mean? And I was embarrassed. I could not give a quick, simple answer to that. But I can now. What does it mean to believe? It means to surrender. I believe in doctors. They don't do me any good at all until I surrender to their skill, even surgery. The antibiotic doesn't do me a bit of good as long as it stays in the bottle until I accept it into my body and that I can experience His power. I believe in God. And many of you would say, I believe in God. I believe in God. That's not the issue. Satan and his angels believe in God, but fear and tremble. It's only when you surrender to Jesus, surrender to His love, surrender to His forgiveness, surrender to His righteousness. It's only at that point that it becomes real. And the result of that, it says here, the outcome of faith is the salvation of your soul. We've said this before, that it's not a matter that you have a soul, it's a matter that you are a soul. When God breathed into mankind the breath of life, He became a living, what? Soul. This result of this is not a ticket to heaven. It is that, but it's also a changed life. Salvation is for now. The salvation of our soul, the salvation of our life, to make it what it should be. You know, Jesus ended the Sermon on the Mount, and I love this. You know, He'd done this very wonderful Sermon on the Mount that we know about. And then He closed. He was a great storyteller, and these stories were called parables, so it's truth alongside of story. And when He finished with this message, He said, anyone who will take these words, this message, and put them into action, he'll be like a man that built his house on the rock. And the rains come and the storms come and his house is going to stand strong. But He said there's another man. He was a fool. He built his house on the sand. The rains came. The floods came. The storms came. And by the way, they'll come in our lives too. And the house on the sand, as a kid, we liked singing this song. And the house on the sand went what? Smash. That was a foolish man. Which are you? Are you surrendering your life? Have you really done that? God so loves you, He gave His only Son, that whosoever believe or surrender their life will have everlasting life. How do you know that's true? This is not a figment of our imagination. It's not written by Walt Disney. It's not a fantasy. It is reliable. There's tremendous evidence that you can stake your life on. All I'm asking is don't ignore it. If you're not sure, if you don't believe, then check it out. Do an intellectual dive and find out and be able to give a reason why you believe. Let's pray together. Father, I'm so very grateful for the stability in this world that doesn't always make sense. And many here this morning are going through a very tough time that doesn't make sense. It's painful. And many times in those kind of times we say, where are you, God? And you're right there ready to embrace Him with your love and strength. some here this morning, Lord, that they're not sure about all this. Lord, I pray that they'll just do one thing, and that's check it out. Do an investigation. Come to Exploring Faith. Look and see what reliability there is in this historical event called the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Lord, thank you for the hope that we have, that Peter talked about, that we still have today, that a solid rock we can build our lives on, and the storms of life will not cause us to smash. Thank you for that in Jesus' name. Amen. Won't you stand? Let's sing this again. Christ, my solid rock. Sing it out. And sing it out with all that's within you. Act like you're at a Chiefs game, or act like you're at the Kansas City Royal game.